אנחנו אוחזים בשבת פרק ראשון, משנה זין. לא? And just be careful with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we had seen until now that our Mishneot focus on Machlokot Bet Shemayim Bet Hillel, and as to what one may do on Friday afternoon, and the Machlokot revolved around the prohibition of Shvitat Kilim. Bet Shemayim say that our vessels may not do Menachan Shabbat, and Bet Hillel say no such concept. So long as we don't do anything, we, our children, our animals, our servants, that's okay. So now our Mishnah is continuing to another machloket, Bet Shemayim Bet Hillel, which also involves Friday afternoon, and that is machloket of what may you give to a non-Jew on Friday afternoon. And really, this is a different concept. Over here, the Isur is a question of Marit Ein. We know that we have a directive, V'yitem Nikiim Elokim Umei Yisrael, should be clean not only from God, but also from our fellow men. We should not do something that seems wrong to other people. Histalek min ha-che'ur u'min ha-domelo. Distance yourself from that which is disgraceful and things that are even similar to being disgraceful. And Shlomo HaMelech said, "Umtzachin v'sechel tov b'nei Elokim v'adam," should find favor also in the eyes of mankind. So we're not allowed to do something that looks like it's prohibited. So a person might say, well, if I dip my index finger into pork and then take my pointer and put it in my mouth, so it looks like I'm eating non-kosher. I'm not really eating something non-kosher. Ordinarily, we say you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do something that looks like it's prohibited. So a person could say, I'll take a fake pencil and I'll move it over my book on Shabbos. Doesn't work. It's not mukta. It's my child's toy. It can't even write. But someone who looks thinks that you're writing on Shabbos. So we have a concept called Marit Ein. You're not allowed to do something that looks like it's prohibited. And Bet Shemayim tell us that if you're going to sell something to a non-Jew or give him something, help him take something on Friday afternoon close to Shabbos, people will think that you sent him to do something, that he's doing your job on Shabbos. So Bet Shemayim say, "En mochim lovet kochavim." You're not allowed to sell an item to a non-Jew. Then toaninimo, nor may you help him load his donkey. Then magbihin alav, nor may you help him load something on his own shoulders. Ela kedei sheyagei lemakom karov. Only on Friday when there's enough time that he'll reach his destination, that his destination is somewhere close by. Kedei, with enough time, sheyagei, that he will reach lemakom karov, to a nearby place where he lives, not far away, and he'll be able to make it there before Shabbos. Uvetilel matirin, and they say, so long as the guy can leave your house, your property, before Shabbos, that's okay. If a non-Jew walks into your property on Shabbos and he says, hey, can I borrow your lawnmower? So even though technically my lawnmower doesn't have to rest on Shabbos, but if he walks out of my house with the lawnmower, people will think I gave it to him on Shabbos. People will think I sent him to mow a lawn on Shabbos. So I have to tell him it's Sabbath today. I cannot lend you my lawnmower today. I'll be happy to give it to you tonight. I'll be happy to give it to you tomorrow. But on Shabbos, I can't lend it to you. What about late Friday afternoon? They still say, provided he can make it out of your house, out of your territory before Shabbos, it is mutar. I'm not worried about Marit Ein. I'm not worried people will think you sent him to mow the lawn. Even though he's going to mow the lawn Friday night, he's going to mow the lawn on Shabbos with your lawnmower. But I don't have a problem that my lawnmower does work on Shabbos. And I'm not worried that people will think I sent him to do it. So Beisel says, so long as he can make it out of your territory on Friday before Shabbos, it is mutar. Mishnah Chet. Now you guys remember, we don't paskin halacha from a Mishnah. We get concepts. Halacha when we learn Hilchot Shabbat. Yeah. When he's going to travel with that item, it looks like he's doing it on your behalf. But Shammai say, we're concerned. People will think you sent him to carry your pack of... You employed him to work on Shabbos. They'll think he's doing your shlichut. He's your messenger. You cannot hire a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos. Correct. Meaning if you come to the mechanic And the mechanic says, I'll fix your car. You come to him an hour before Shabbos. He says, it'll take me 5 hours, and I'll have it ready for you just after Shabbos. So then basically you're hiring him to work on Shabbos. That's not permitted. If the mechanic tells you, I'll have it ready for you Sunday morning, so then it's his business when he does the work. He's not Jewish. He's allowed to work on Shabbos. He chooses to work on Shabbos instead of working Saturday night, Motzei Shabbat. That's his prerogative. It's not my business, provided that my license plate doesn't say I'm a Jew, or my license plate doesn't say Torah 613, or I don't have tzitzis hanging out of my car. If it's an item that everyone sees he's working on a Jew's car on Shabbos, then there might be a problem. Meaning if I give my clothing to the laundromat, and the Chinaman tells me, I'll do your clothing, you'll have it ready by Sunday morning, no problem. But if I walk by on Shabbos and everyone sees that my clothing are being laundered and hung out on Shabbos, they see my talis being worked on Shabbos, then there could be a problem. Because everyone sees he's working on my behalf on Shabbos. So long as he can do it at his own pace, and he doesn't have to work on Shabbos, so then he could do it whenever he wants. But if everyone sees he's doing a Jew's work on Shabbos, then we could enter the realm of Maritain. We said if the condition is that it depends on when he could do the work. Meaning if he could do the work before Shabbos or after Shabbos, so then, again, this isn't halacha. Technically, halacha, we'll talk a different time. Yeah. He could work all night. I didn't tell him not to work all night.
Let's say there's no free time, it's 5 hours.
You're saying, right, you're saying it's so much work. It's a good question, I have to look into that. I don't know. You're saying each one, right. Or even if you do know about the other, right. It's a good question, I have to look into that.
Another question?
Yeah, okay. So that deserves its own discussion. How does that work? If that works. Mishnah Chet. Yeah. En mochin, we don't sell lovet kochavim to one who serves the stars. Ven ta'aninim ovet kochavim is. We don't sell him, even if he wants to buy an object on Friday afternoon. If he can't make it home, because when he leaves my property with the lawnmower, no one knows I sold him the lawnmower. They think he's taking my lawnmower to mow a lawn on Shabbos. So I can't even sell him an object unless he has enough time to make it out of the house, to make it to his house before Shabbat. Mishnachit. Beit Shammai Omerim. Beit Shammai say, you notice that Beit Shammai is always first in the Mishnah. En notini norot labedan. You don't give height to the tanner, the person who's going to work the hides, v'lo kelim lekoves avot kochavim, nor can you give your clothing, your objects, to a non-Jewish launderer, to a non-Jewish laundromat, ela kedei she'yasu mibod yom, only if he has enough time to do the work before Shabbos. Uvechulan, and in all the cases we mentioned, in all the Mishnayot, v'tilel maturin ima shemesh. Beis Hillel say, so long as the sun is still out, you're allowed to give the objects to the non-Jew, you're allowed to start all these processes, all these different forms of labor can be begun on Friday afternoon, so long as it's not yet Shabbat. Yes? Even if he'll end up working on Shabbos, that's not my business. Now again, it has to be that you close the price and that he can get the work done whenever he wants. Those are other details. But Beis Hillel will say, you gave it to him before Shabbos. When he'll have it ready isn't my business. So long as he's not forced to work on Shabbos. A non-Jew cannot do my work for me on Shabbos. There's Amira Lenochri Shvot, Midrabanan. Our sages forbade us to tell a non-Jew to do work on Shabbos. It is rabbinically prohibited. But if I don't tell him to work on Shabbos, he has a choice when he'll do it. That's fine. That's why we could send mail. Every letter you send to America, they might deliver it on Shabbos. You don't know when, but you didn't tell them they have to. If you sign Saturday delivery, so then that needs a halachic discussion. whether it's permitted or not. But if you didn't sign Saturday delivery, they could deliver it on any day they choose. So fine. That's their prerogative when they'll deliver it. Mishnah Tet. Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who was the Nasi, and his father was the Nasi before him, he said as follows. Noagina yu beit Abba. My father. Yeah. No problem, we'll go back. Yeah. What? So we'll wait. So let's review what we saw until now. What do we see? We saw that Beit Shammai prohibited starting work on Friday that will continue happening on its own into Shabbat. If I leave something to soak, if I leave colors to be absorbed in a hide, in wool, in linen, that's all prohibited. If I set out traps and they'll work on Shabbos catching animals, Beit Shammai say that's all asur, Metiliel say no problem. Then we went on to say, Beit Shammai say, we have a prohibition of Marit Ayin. I don't want you selling or giving an item to a non-Jew on Friday afternoon, because whoever sees it will think that you sent him to work on Shabbat, and you're not allowed to send the non-Jew to do your work on Shabbos. The rabbis forbade us to employ a non-Jew to work for us on Shabbos. Now, obviously there are many details, but the general rule is, just as we must rest on Shabbos, we may not ask a non-Jew to do our work for us on Shabbos. So Beit Shammai say, even if you sold him the object, people will think when he's taking the object out of your house and he goes home with it, they'll think you employed him to do that. So Beit Shammai say, you can only give him or sell him or help him load his donkey when he can get to his location, to his destination, before Shabbat. And Beit Shammai say, no problem, so long as he can make it out of your house, we're not worried about that. Correct. Beit Shammai say, when you're giving a launderer your clothing, so he has to be able to finish doing the laundry before Shabbat. And Beit Shammai say, so long as you didn't tell him to work on Shabbat, so you could give it to him even a late Friday afternoon, and he'll do the work whenever he wants. And now, Mishnah Tet, is Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel is going to share with us what was the custom of his father's house, where on the one hand we have a rule, Maaseh Rav, that when the Mishnah records something that was done in practice, then that has halachic strength, as though the rabbis ruled that is the halacha. The second, the Mishnah quotes to us, this is what they did in practice, so that has great halachic weight. It's even stronger than the opinion of Chachamim. Meaning, if I have a Chachamim say this way, and the Dat Yachid, an individual, holds differently than Chachamim, ordinarily I say the majority opinion wins. But if I have Maaseh Rav, the minority opinion tells me, and you know, this and this rabbi actually ruled that this is how we should perform. He not only holds that is halacha, but he in practice actually ruled that way. So then Maaseh Rav can be stronger than the majority opinion. So now Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel quotes to us Maaseh Rav. He says, Noagin hayu beit Abba, in my father's house they had the custom, שהיו נותנים כלי לבן לכובס עובד כוכבים. A great occurrence. No, Maaseh Rav is a great story. Look it up over here in the Gemara. No, it's not over here. It's in the beginning of the second chapter of Shabbat. The Gemara says, Maaseh Rav mikol makom kasha. Over there, we see that Maaseh Rav is stronger than Da'at Chachamim. So, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, the custom of my father's house was, Shayu notenin klei lavan lekoves oved kochavim shlosha yamin kodem na Shabbat, when they had white garments to launder. So white garments required a lot of work, and they went with Beit Shammai's opinion, and they said, you can't give it to the launderer on Friday. You have to give it to him 3 days before Shabbat, so he has time to finish laundering these white garments before Shabbat. So he's telling us that his father, his father's family, there they went with Beit Shammai. So this gives greater strength to Beit Shammai, even though, bottom line, we won't go with them halachically. Now the Mishnah concludes, V'shavin elu ve'elu, and Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel both agree, that you could set up the weights in the olive press or in the great press. You could set them up on Friday, even though the liquid keeps flowing out on Shabbat. But Beit Shammai agree, you're allowed to do that. Why? Right? Why is this permitted? You have a press. You want to make oil, you want to make wine. What? Beit Abad is an olive press, correct. Because an olive press, they had a bad, they had a big beam that they used for the press. So it's called Beit Abad, the place where you have the beam. So it's an olive press. And Igulei Agat was because in the gat, in the grape press, they used to press it with these round planks, these round pleat pieces of wood. So Igulei Agat. I don't know if the planks themselves weighed or they put a weight on top of them. I don't know. We have to look it up. So they say you're allowed to place these things and set them up, even though all Friday night and all Shabbos the weight is pushing down on the olives and the grapes, and theoretically you should say Shvitat Kelim, let your vessels rest. So here the Gemara says we're talking about a situation where the press already, the olives and the grapes have been ground up, and so really even without the press, the mere fact that they're sitting there ground up will cause the liquid to flow. But you put it under the weight, so more liquid flows. It flows more quickly. But really, even without the press, the olives and the grapes are in a state that the liquid is going to flow out of them. So therefore, they say, even if you did it on Shabbos, there's no biblical prohibition. Because they're in a state where they've already been ground up and the liquid is just flowing out slowly. And the press helps it flow out more quickly, and that's why Beit Shammai permit you to do it on Friday afternoon, even though the liquid will flow out throughout Shabbat. Just a second, maybe one second. Yeah. Igulei Agat are the round planks in the grape press. Igulei, the round planks of the gat of the grape press. Oh, let me see the picture. I don't know. Well, oh, that's how they draw it? Go to the next.
But the Bamuda bias.
Next page?
Yeah, go to the next page, he says. Oh. Now you see the planks? You see the picture?
These pictures are fine.
Now, these are after they were ground up. That's what I think they're showing you in other pictures, that they were pressed and ground. Okay? Sorry, I need my Mishnayot. If they want me to explain pictures, I have to see the pictures. Okay, so the picture in the first page, we said that the olives have already been broken up. So picture number one shows you a man with a bat breaking up the olives. Picture number two shows you that after they were broken up, they used to grind them. So he's grinding the olives. Now, that's what I said, that the olives are in a state that they've already been mashed up so that the oil would flow even without the press. They're drawing on the Gemara. Okay, maybe the Bartanura quotes it. Yeah, Bartanura is quoting the Gemara, that we're talking about a situation where they've already been ground up. They've already been beaten and ground up. So they're showing you how you beat the olives and then grind them up, and then after that, you put them under the press. And the grapes, they're showing you on the next page the picture of how they stepped on the grapes. And only after the grapes have already been mashed up, so then they put them under these round planks so that the grapes will be pressed better. Okay? Yeah. Nachon, aval. Here we're talking about where the things are on their way out anyway. So if you did it on Shabbos, there's a discussion. Technically, we say it would be a sumid rabbanan if you did it on Shabbat, because it's in a state where it's already been broken up. Because it's been so broken up, it's not like you take it out of its makom gidulo. Schita, the concept of schita is that you have something, you have a grape, and you don't have any liquid here. And when you squeeze it, you're taking out the liquid from the grape. But when you do, when you have a grape that's all broken up and the liquid is on its way out, even when you squeeze it, you're not doing schita d'oraita because it's all broken up. So the liquid is on its way out. It's half between liquid and solid, and if you just let it sit a little bit longer, the liquid will come out. So that's what we said, that in this instance, Bet Shammai permit you to do it, even though it's within your vessels, and technically Bet Shammai should say, Shvitat Kelim, make your vessels rest on Shabbat. Here, they say, being that even if you did it by hand, there's no Isul Doraita, there's no biblical prohibition, so even if your vessels do this work, it's not prohibited. Mishnah Yud. Okay. Now Mishnah Yud goes on to a new topic. And we're continuing with Friday afternoon. And the Mishnah discusses roasting. You remember we said yesterday that when you have something on the fire, so people would always stir the coals. And that's called lechatot bagechalim, to stir the coals. And stirring the coals involves two biblical prohibitions. You're putting out the upper coals and you're arousing the lower coals. So when you stir the coals, it's an isul doraita. It is a biblical prohibition. So our Mishnah tells us, if you want to roast something on Friday afternoon, we are concerned that if you leave your roast over the fire into Shabbat, so you'll come to moving the coals on Shabbat. So we only let you roast something from Friday afternoon and leave it over the flame into Shabbat if it's reached a stage where we trust that you won't be so worried about this meat and you won't stir the coals. What's that stage? That's the stage that it reaches its minimum edible status. So there was a famous robber called Ben de Roussai. Ben de Roussai was a robber who was always on the run. He never knew when people were catching up to him. So he'd steal a goat, slaughter it, start roasting it, and when it was a third cooked or halfway cooked, he'd gobble it down because he had to run to his next job. Never had time to sit down and wait till things were fully roasted. So that's quoted as a halachic status. The Mahal Ben Drusai, when it's edible for this robber called Ben Drusai. So that's considered the minimum amount of cooking. And it's unclear whether that's halfway cooked or a third cooked. Ben Drusai. The Mishnah is going to quote it. No, the Mishnah doesn't quote it. The Gemara quotes it. The Mishnah says like this. Entzolin, one may not roast. Basal, meat. Batzal, onion. Uveitza, and even an egg. Ela kedei sheyitzolu mibeod yom. Only if you know that it could roast by daytime. Here, even Bet Hillel agree. It has to be roasted before Shabbat. How roasted? So we say it has to be roasted at least a third or a halfway roasted so that it's edible to this Ben Drusai Ganev. Yeah. And then you could leave it on there. And then even though it's on the fire, we say, you know it's edible, so how worried are you? You're not going to deal with the fire. Correct. Because the fire is right here and it's easily accessible, and you just touch it in 1 second, you did an isul doraita, and it's something that people did freely, without thinking. So we are concerned that if you put an egg a minute before Shabbos, even though midoraita you did nothing wrong, and you could eat that egg on Shabbos, midrabanan, Chazal said, the chances are that you'll be worried, will this egg be ready for my Friday night meal? You don't know. So you'll move the coals. And without thinking about it, you'll end up doing an isul doraita. So Chazal said, you cannot leave that egg there from Friday afternoon. It has to be cooked. So it's edible. So you're not worried about it. You know you could eat it tonight. Yes, Meir. Derusai. Look in the Rabbeinu Badiyam that Nuri. He quotes it right away. Kemachal ben derusai. The Mishnah continues. Okay, we'll wait. Huh? That's okay. En notinin pat la tanur. One may not put bread in a tanur im chashecha directly before night time, Friday evening, Shabbos night. Oh, good. You noticed. Very good. So, most people assume that Im Chashecha is just like Im HaShemesh and at night. But the Gra writes in Shulchan Aruch that Im Chashecha means directly before nighttime. Meaning minutes before it's Shabbos. If we talk about Samuch LaChashecha, we're talking about the last half hour before nighttime. So then we're less concerned you're going to do something wrong. Im Chashecha means together with nightfall. So you're literally minutes before Shabbos. So there we are more concerned. So the Mishnah tells us if you want to put bread in a tanul, what is a tanul? So in their times, in ancient times, they had three types of ovens. They had a tanul, which was the hottest form of an oven. A tanul was an earthenware oven that was, they attached it with tar to the ground, mechuban lakalka, and it was built like a tent. It was built wide on the bottom. You had a wide fire on the bottom, and it became narrow on top. And on top, you had a hole, and on that hole, you could place your pot. Sometimes you placed it inside the oven, sometimes you placed it on top of the oven, but on the bottom you had a very wide flame, and then on top it became narrow, so it was a very, very hot oven. Now, when they used to bake their bread, they used to bake pito. So they'd make a flat piece of dough and stick it to the panels of the tanur, the inside. They'd stick it to the inside, usually, if the tanur became too full. So then sometimes they'd make a lip, they'd make a rim around the top of the tanur, and they'd stick food on top as well. But the flame was on the bottom. The flame was on the bottom, and up on top they could stick the dough to the walls, to the panels of the oven. And then, with great skill, when the dough became a good pita, so with skill, they had a special instrument that they'd use to peel it off the walls of the oven, and that action of taking it off the walls of the oven was called Ridiyat Hapat, the removal of the bread from the walls of the oven. And that took skill, Ridiyat Hapat. It's skill like blowing shofar, something which you could do, it's not a melacha, but on the other hand, it takes skill. So it's a chokhmah, it's something that takes wisdom, but it's not a melacha. So our Mishnah is focused on putting bread inside this oven late Friday afternoon. So you have a piece of dough, and the Mishnah says, "En notenin pat latanur im chashecha." One may not place bread inside the oven near nightfall. Velo, nor may one place a charara. That's a charara was a cake that was cooked directly on the coals. You'd have a coal burning hot. You take the dough, sweet dough, it was a cake, and you put it on the coal. So charara is, throughout the Mishnayot, you'll encounter this type of cookie. It's a charara. Charara is a cookie that was baked directly al gabei hagechalim, on top of the coals. So the Mishnah says, one may not place the dough for bread inside this tanul, this form of an oven, directly before nightfall, nor may one place the charara, this coal cookie, al gabei gechalim, on top of the coals, ela kedei, only if you have enough time, sheyikremu paneha, that its face will harden, that its face will become crusty, mi be'od yom, when it's still day. So you have to reach that amount of cooking again. Now, here, we're talking about something that's slightly different. It's not that you have a flame directly before you in the tanul. The tanul has a door to it. It's not like the tzliya, the roasting, where the flame is right there. You could touch it in a second and get the flame going. In the tanul, you have to still open the door. But not, and when you open the door, the tanul cools off a little bit. It's not like roasting, where when you want to move the coals, you're going to only gain. On the other hand, by roasting, if you move the coals, you have a new fire. The fire might burn, scorch your meat. But still over here, so the Mishnah says, even by an oven, and you have this bread, you're not allowed to put the bread nor this cookie on the coals. Ela kedei sheikremu faneh mi be'od yom. Only if it can crust, the face of it can crust when it's still day before Shabbat. Then we assume if it's baked that much, you won't come to touching the coals on Shabbat. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, and we know whenever we encounter Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah, that's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, who was the disciple of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the disciple of Shammai and Hillel, primarily of Hillel, but also of Shammai. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus learned from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he took from him directly the way of Shammai. That's why he is Shamuti, and the halacha is not going to be like Rabbi Eliezer throughout the Shas. So nonetheless, Rabbi Eliezer says, Kidei sheikom atachton shela. You don't have to wait until the face gets crust, becomes a crust, but until the bottom becomes a crust. The bottom that is touching the oven, that's what gets baked first. And once that bakes, that's enough that you could leave the dough to continue baking in this oven into Shabbat. Now this has a lot of halachic applications, but we didn't learn halacha. We just introduced the concepts of the Mishnah. When you learn halacha, you'll have a very good basis. So let's review what we saw in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if you want to roast something before Shabbat, you want to leave something on the flame going into Shabbat. So when you have a situation of roast, you're roasting meat, you're roasting an onion, you're roasting an egg, we say, you want to roast those things, they have to reach at least machal ben derusai, that they're edible to this bandit called ben derusai, so that it's roasted halfway or a third of the way, and it's at least edible, so then you're not so worried about how much better it's going to roast into Shabbat, and therefore you can leave it over the flame. We're not concerned that you will touch the coals on Shabbat. What about bread? So if you take your pita and you stick it to the walls of a tanul, which we said is an oven that's built like a tent, it's built diagonally, wider on the bottom and thin on top, so it's very hot, you may not place that dough onto the walls of the oven unless you know that it will harden, it will crust, the face of it will crust on Friday before Shabbat. Rabbi Eliezer says it's enough that the bottom will crust. The same thing is true for a chagaga, a cookie that's cooked directly on the coals. So Tanakama says, so long as the top of it crusts, and Rabbi Eliezer says, it's enough that the bottom will crust before Shabbat. And now we're up to Mishnah Yud Aleph. We just said that if you want to roast something, it has to be roasted on Friday. You cannot put something to roast going into Shabbos unless it's at least roasted a third of the way before Shabbos. What happens if Pesach falls out on Shabbos and we know that they'd slaughter the Pesach sacrifice on the 14th, the day before Pesach, and then they'd set it up to roast going into Shabbos, and when they roasted it, so they could roast it inside the oven. So long as it's being roasted by the heat of the fire, that's okay. You could put it in an oven where it'll roast nicer. So our Mishnah says, "Meshalshelin et haPesach." One may lower the Pesach sacrifice batanu into the tanu, which we said is a specific oven, im chashecha, directly with nightfall. The last Mishnah said you want to roast meat, it has to be roasted a third. But when it comes to the Korban Pesach, you're not the only one eating this Korban. There are another 30, 40 people here. And everyone has their eye on the Korban Pesach because it was a complicated roast. The Korban Pesach, you had to put the whole animal together into the Rosho, Al-Kibav, Al-Kraav, everything together was roasted. Now that's not an easy thing to roast. You don't want the outside to burn. You do want the inside to cook. You don't want to eat it raw. You have to eat it exactly cooked. So that's not so easy. So everyone, all 35, 40 people, all members, everyone's going to get a kazayis. No one has to eat more than a kazayis of a Korban Pesach. So you could have 100 people on one Korban Pesach. Everyone's sitting around in one room, and they're all keeping an eye on that. If you're going to want to open up the door to the oven and start touching the coals, everyone's going to pounce on you. What you doing? So if it's Shabbos, even though Pesach fell out on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to touch the coals on Shabbos, and ordinarily we're concerned if something isn't fully roasted, or at least roasted a third before Shabbat, we're concerned you're going to play around with the coals on Shabbos. In a situation of a Korban Pesach, we're not worried. No one's going to let you get away with anything. So that's why the Mishnah says, "Meshalshelin et haPesach batanur," one may lower the Pesach sacrifice into the tanur, into that oven, Im chashicha, with nightfall, even though you're only starting the roast. Correct. Mishav shenin is you lower it into the oven, you're starting the roast. Im chashicha, with nightfall, just before Shabbos. So that's the first halacha. Then the Mishnah goes on to tell us about the Beit HaMoked. In the Beit HaMikdash, so we know that when you brought korbanot, part of the korbanot was sometimes a mincha, a flower sacrifice. And part of the korban was that they had to catch the blood of the sacrificed animal. Different parts of the korban were transported in a kli sharet, in a vessel that was used for service in the Beit HaMikdash. And when something went into a kli sharet, so then there could be no chatzitza, nothing that separates between that item and the vessel. The vessels had to be directly in the kli sharet. Let's say you didn't clean it out. Well, there was a little bit of oil stuck onto the walls. You have a problem, because the kli sharet, the vessels of the temple, gave holiness to the items that were placed in them. And the items had to be placed directly in them. The vessels had to be very clean, and there could be nothing separating between the item and the vessel. The vessel had to be completely clean. The Navi tells us that the floor of the Beit HaMikdash also had the din of a kli sharet. And the Kohanim, when they did their service in the Beit HaMikdash, had to stand with the bare feet directly on the floor. If one Kohen was standing on another Kohen's foot, he had a problem. They had to stand directly on the floor. So they're standing on a cold marble floor doing service. You could imagine that they caught colds, that they got sick. The Kohanim got sick because they had to eat a lot of meat. And the Kohanim got sick because they were standing barefoot on a cold stone floor. So they set up for the Kohanim special rooms where they had a fire going where they could thaw out. And those rooms were called Beit HaMoked. The rooms where they had a fire going. Moked is a fire. So, what about the fires in those rooms? We know that Kohanim Zlizinim. The Kohanim are always tough. They're swift. They're very careful. They all learn Torah. They're the teachers in Am Yisrael. They're their Abbeim. You could rely on them. So, therefore, Chazal could be more lenient with regard to Kohanim in the Beit HaMikdash. So, the Mishnah says, U'machizin et ha'ur. And one can start a fire going bimdurat Beit HaMoked, in the big fire, in the barn fire, this big fireplace that they had in the rooms called Beit HaMoked, the room where the Kohanim would heat themselves up, because we're not concerned that they're going to play around with the fire to warm themselves. Uvagvulin, but outside the Beit HaMikdash, everywhere else, kedei shetechoz ha'ur beruban. You could only have a fireplace going on Shabbos if the majority of the fireplace is already lit. You can't put in 10 new logs and you have a small fire going and you assume over Shabbos all the logs will catch. You want to put in 10 new logs, you have to have 100 other logs. You have to have most of the fireplace going, and then you could add new logs that will catch on Shabbos if the majority of the fireplace is going. So then you can have it on Shabbos. If the majority is not going, then we're concerned you're sitting in a cold house. Before you think twice, you'll end up playing with the fire, doing an isul d'oraita. So just like we said, you can't leave something to roast. By the same token, you cannot leave a fire at home, even though that's your source of heat. So you want to set it up for Shabbos, set it up that it's burning nicely before Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda tells us, who's Rabbi Yehuda when we have Rabbi Yehuda Stam in the Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi. Rabbi Yehuda says, Bapechanin, if you have coals, so you know the coals, they catch on without a problem. Coals, you're not worried they're going to die out. So Bapechanin, Kolshu, even if it only started catching on, because you're not concerned, they're coals, they burn easily. So Bapechanin, if your fire is a fire of coals, even if you're at home, we're not worried you'll play around with the fire. It's enough that the fire only started to catch on, and then you could leave it running into Shabbat. And with this, we've concluded the first chapter. Let's quickly review what we learned in this last Mishnah. In this Mishnah, we learned that even though when you roast things on Friday afternoon, you have to have it roasted at least to the point that it's edible before Shabbat, because otherwise we're concerned you're going to play around with the fire. If Pesach falls out on Shabbos, they permitted us to start roasting just before Shabbos. even though it's not edible before Shabbos, because we are not concerned that you will play with the fire on Shabbos, because there are many people watching that oven. So you're not going to end up doing any Nisul Doraita. By the same token, even though ordinarily our sages said you're not allowed to start a fireplace going on Friday afternoon unless you know that the fireplace is going to catch, well, the majority of the logs will catch before Shabbos. Otherwise, we're concerned that you'll play around with the fire on Shabbos, and that's an Isul Doraita. But in the Beit HaMikdash, where you had Kohanim, and the Kohanim could be relied upon, that they're careful and they're learned people, and it's a public fireplace. So Chazal said, over there, you could start the fire just before Shabbos, because we're not concerned you're going to play with it. Rabbi Yehuda gave us another leniency. He said that even in your private home, even outside the Beit HaMikdash, if the fireplace is going to have coals, so those are things that you're not concerned that they're going to die out, once the fire started catching on, you could leave a new fire in the fireplace going into Shabbat, because we're not concerned you're going to play around with it, because coals are things that catch on easily. Yeah? Okay.